From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
We're excited about our next guest, New York Times bestselling author and ultramarathoning legend Dean Karnazes, who has pushed his body and mind to inconceivable limits, from running in shoe-melting heat of Death Valley to the lung-freezing cold of the South Pole. He's raced and competed across the globe and once ran 50 marathons in 50 states in 50 consecutive days. If you're not already tired about hearing how much and how exhausting all that running is, he also ran across the country, averaging 40 to 50 miles per day and completing it in 75 days. What fuels the mind's ability to direct the body towards this seemingly immortal feat? Dean Karnazes joins us now to discuss his new book and what drives him today. Dean, welcome to The Mountain Life.
I'm tired just listening to that intro, but thank you for having me.
It's good to have you on the show, friend. And man, I am so excited about your new book and this adventure, this new adventure of life that you are jumping into.
Well, you know, I've been doing this now for almost three decades, Pete, and I'm still going strong. I still love it as much now as I did the day it began.
I can tell. And you have some pretty mighty accomplishments, so I'm going to go ahead and just ask, what, when you reflect back with almost 50 years of running, what are your most kind of proud moments as a athlete and then as, you know, a family man, juggling all of those components?
Well, I mean, I've had the pleasure of running on all seven continents of Earth twice now. So, I mean, I've raced and competed across the globe. I've been to, you know, some really amazing places, Patagonia, Namibia, you know, Australia. I could go on and on. But I think that, you know, running 50 marathons in 50 states and 50 consecutive days here in the U.S. was probably the most daunting challenge overall, just because it stretched beyond just the running. There was the physical challenge, and then there was, you know, the travel and logistics. So kind of the business challenge as well as the emotional challenge of kind of always questioning, you know, am I going to make it? Like, you know, can I get out of bed this morning? So I would say that is, you know, the pinnacle of my kind of athletic achievements. But as far as my proudest moment, that one's easy. I ran a 10K with my daughter Alexandria on her 10th birthday. And, you know, nothing will ever surpass that moment.
That's great. If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, our guest is Dean Karnazes. He's written a new book called A Runner's High, My Life in Motion. That's after several other New York Times best-selling books. You, Dean, are someone who does a sport, who embraces it, and then who talks about it a lot, which is a whole other part of, you know, some would say endurance, right? Is figuring out how to make this sport that you love, you know, how to turn it in, how to parlay it into something that also can provide a living for you. At what point did you think, hey, I can monetize this thing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. My first book was called Ultra Marathon Man. And I wrote the book just because I wanted to write a book. It was one of those kind of life achievements that I strive for. As everyone has a bucket list, you know, I wanted to jump out of an airplane, you know, try skydiving, eat sushi, you know, swim with sharks, write a book. So I wrote this book and, you know, kind of checked that off my list. And I thought, you know, if five of my buddies buy this, I'll be lucky. And it became a New York Times bestseller. And it, you know, I just thought, well, you know, where's the power in this guy talking about running, you know, hundreds of miles on these obscure races? You know, how do other people relate to that? And I found that my audience wasn't necessarily other ultra endurance athletes, because right, there aren't a lot of us. These were just, you know, everyday athletes and non-athletes were reading my books. So I kind of dedicated myself to the craft of writing. And now finally, you know, five books later, I'm starting to get some, you know, literary praise just for the writing style and the storytelling on its own. And that makes me just as proud as any ultra marathon, because to me, you know, writing is like running. It's 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. And I work just as hard at writing as I do at running.
You know, it's a good point that you make, that it's not other, you know, you're not preaching to the choir here. You are appealing to some. Why I would pick up your book and read it is because the last half marathon I ran was like 6 years ago, and I swore I was going to give up running, and pretty much have. We're looking, you know, the average person is looking for inspiration, and whether it's in running or walking or mountain biking or cross country skiing or writing a book, we are looking for inspiration. You tell a great story that I read somewhere about a woman that was maybe a staff member at an airport who actually recognized you, which you thought was kind of bizarre because who recognizes an ultra runner, right? But you had a very public run across the country. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, she was a member of the TSA, and she was, you know, kind of doing the security check. And she looked up at me, and she didn't appear to be an athlete at all. She just kind of said, "You're amazing." And I thought, okay, what did I do? Did I, you know, did I not screw up the security check and kind of breeze through?
Which
you
is
know?
Amazing.
And she said, yeah. She said, you know, I've been following you. I followed you every day when you ran across America, and you really inspired me. She said, I just signed up for the Couch to 5K program. I'm gonna try it. I'm going to try to become a runner. And, you know, she just said, you know, you're so inspirational. And I looked at her and I just thought, you're inspirational. I mean, to, you know, pick yourself up like that and, you know, look to turn your life around. I was incredibly inspired by her, you know, saying how much she thought I was an inspiration.
Which is definitely,
but, you know, the book. Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. The book itself, I mean, I wrote the book to be just what you said, to be an inspiration and to be I wanted to have some, you know, literary enjoyment for the reader. I wanted it to be kind of a form of escapism, kind of like a good run where you just kind of get into it and you forget about your worries and you know, you absorb yourself in the story. And that's, you know, that was part of the goal I set out to achieve when I wrote the book. And, you know, just this morning I was looking through my email and I got an email from a guy who said that he intended to read a couple chapters last night before bed. And he said 6 hours later, he finished the final page. And then he said, and then I got up and he said, I just had to go on a run. And I thought, wow, that made it all worthwhile.
Yeah. And
that's one of the things that's so wonderful. You know, I've had the opportunity to run with you a bit here in Park City and around the country. And running with you is kind of that nice, you run and you don't realize that it's as painful. You don't realize that it's as much work. And that's the way your book reads, too. How do you make that experience happen both in running and in your book? What is it that you really tried to draw out?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm 100% Greek, and, you know, the Greeks are natural storytellers. I mean, starting with Homer. So I think it has to be one, it has to be relatable, and you have to paint a visual picture with your words so that the reader, you know, steps in your shoes, essentially, and they come along on the journey. So, you know, you have to show your vulnerabilities, you have to be open and honest, and you also have to, you know, it has to be a sense of adventure, I think. You know, you and I ran in Park City and, you know, we were running up and down a ski slope and it kind of transcends running itself. I mean, most people think about running as, you know, getting on a track or, you know, running on a road for a set amount of time. And it's kind of painful and miserable. But, you know, when you get out into nature and you know, it's more about exploration than adventure. And I think, you know, keeping that tone throughout the book is what it, you know, propels people to keep turning the pages because, you know, there's natural storytelling, there's drama, you know, there's all those things that happen during an ultramarathon, which in a lot of ways is just a microcosm of life.
Very much an allegory of life. And this story really does focus on this new journey for you, going from, you know, an elite athlete to, you know, someone who's in their 50s and coming back to those same races. It's hard for me, you know, I'm now in my 40s to even come back to races I did in my 20s and 30s and compare myself and look at splits, but you had a different journey and you bring us through that with the book. Kind of give us a little tease of what that experience is as a new racer.
Yeah, it was somewhat of a rebirth as a, you know, at a different stage of my life. and, you know, one where I'm admittedly slower, you know, not as competitive as I used to be. And, you know, that can be demoralizing. You know, you look at your times in previous races for those same distances, and you're like, oh, man, what happened to my leg speed? But I thought you can really throw yourself at this kind of challenge of longevity, of seeing how well you can do at a certain stage of your life. And that was something that was kind of a paradigm shift for me, is, you know, don't think about the podium, just think about being the best Dean that Dean can be on race day. Just try your hardest and achieve your personal bestness. And that you can define as victory, not getting a medal put around your neck, but just being the best that you could be, you know, given the tools that you've gotten and the limitations that you're now facing.
We're speaking with Dean Karnazes. His book is A Runner's High, My Life in Motion. To a large degree in the book, Dean, you talk about, yeah, going back and doing the Western States 100 that you had done decades before, that you've won, and doing it as a runner in your 50s. We know that endurance sports, the best endurance runners, you know, they're not young. And I think partially that's because as we age, we grow an ability to have our minds control what our bodies do. And I just wanted you to talk about that a little bit, like how much it is mind over matter. I know it's huge. Pete knows it's huge, but I'd like to hear it from you.
Yeah, I mean, with that race, the Western States 100-mile endurance run, you know, they say you run the first 50 miles with your legs and the next 50 miles with your mind. So it's very much a challenge of, your mental stamina as well as your physical stamina. And, you know, I've seen this time and time again. You go to an ultramarathon and you look around the crowd at the start, and not everyone looks, you know, hella fit. Like some of the people you see, you're like, they don't even look like a runner necessarily.
Yeah.
But then you see them, you know, 8 or 9 hours later crossing the finish line, and you realize it's just this internal grit that they've got that is just relentless. So I think the mind can overcome obstacles. And I think ultramarathoning teaches you just, you know, how bad things can become, and you can still, you know, arise and keep going.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, too, about your body, and I don't know if you're familiar with the Egoscue method, but that is the man who developed it. We spoke with last week, Pete Egoscue. He lives here in Park City. But his premise is that the body knows no age, you know, if it's balanced, and if you're doing the things to keep it in balance, you should be able to do this stuff, you know, into your 80s. You should even be able to have like your best performance in your 50s. As I look, there's so many images of you, and I'm trying to pick apart anything I can see that maybe is like, I bet his knees hurt when he does this. I'm worried about your joints. Talk to us about your joints.
My joints are very happy. It's ironic that a guy that runs so much doesn't have any hip pain, any knee pain. You know, I've never had an overuse injury from running. So I've never, you know, people say, how do you deal with injury? And I have to be honest, I've never had to deal with injury. I do a lot of cross training to keep my overall, you know, body really fit. I don't just run. I think if you just run, that's a recipe for overuse injury. But, you know, so far I'm still holding together pretty well.
And you are a specimen. I mean, if you look at the picture on the book and online, you know, you are a very fit guy. And you also have other businesses where you're involved with yogurt and other healthier lifestyle activities. Is there, you said you cross train, is there some other keys to that to help keep you so active and fit?
You know, that's a really good question, Pete. And to me, you know, I try to optimize everything in my life to be the best animal that I can be. So I take this kind of holistic 360-degree view of fitness and wellness, and that involves, you know, training, that involves cross-training, as we just talked about. that involves diet and nutrition. It involves sleep, good quality sleep, as well as interpersonal relationships. You know, trying to have harmonious interpersonal relationships. And I think a lot of athletes overlook that element. And if you, you know, if you have harmonious interpersonal relationships with your friends and your family, you know, your life is better, your performance is better, you feel better. And just the opposite is true. You know, if you have a lot of tension in your life and there's a lot of strife, you know, that raises your cortisol levels. That impacts negatively your performance and your overall health. So I don't think it's just one thing that I do. I think it's all of those things.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and jump into the book a little bit, your new book called The Runner's High. And when I opened up the book, I really started with the table of contents. And I love the chapter titles for all of them. And one that stood out to me and was the calves and the calf knots. And I jumped right into that chapter. And what won me was a quote that you said, "To win the game is great, to play the game is greater, but to love the game is greatest of all." And how that really resonated with me as a runner, but as a parent, as just a person in life. It was a transformative quote.
Well, I think it speaks to, you know, just having passion for life. and, you know, now that I've had, you know, 5 decades of it, I realize that life is short. I mean, it's almost cliche to say that, but, you know, it is short, and it goes away permanently, you know, most likely. And, you know, to live your life without passion and without love for what you're doing, it's cutting yourself short.
Mm. It's definitely something to struggle with, though, when you're in the midst of a hard challenge, and you can go back and forth to comparing yourself. You can go back to the pain in the Western States, the heat on the ridge there towards the finish, to find that joy in things that are hard. You know, we get a lot of folks, and even myself, I'm like, oh, I don't want to do an interval. I don't want to do this long run. I could stay home with the kids and relax. Is it still enjoyable to suffer a little bit?
I mean, even
especially on the heat of Western States. So,
oh, it's unrelenting, and you know, I live for it. I mean, I think when we reflect back on our lives, I think you know we remember the extremes on both ends, right? We remember the most joyous moments, and we also remember the most painful moments that we somehow, you know, prevailed. And I think, you know, that which is most difficult to endure is, you know, it's most rewarding to reflect upon. So I think that, you know, I wrote about the Western States in my book because it was a bad race. Let's face it. I mean, from a competitive standpoint, you know, the quote unquote, the wheels came off, but I think it makes a much better story. I mean, if I had a good race and everything went smoothly, I don't think it'd be, you know, it would be nearly as engaging. But to talk about the, you know, the trauma and the drama of suffering, I think, you know, it's relatable because a lot of our lives are spent in that same state, you know, that same state of struggle.
Yeah. I have a friend that I traveled with a lot in my 20s. We would do these bike tours and, you know, something would always go wrong. And he would always refer to it as the perfect bad day, you know, the day that makes the memories, because the perfect days, the ones that nothing goes wrong, you never remember those. And so I've carried that little saying throughout my life. Anytime things go wrong, it's a perfect bad day.
Perfect bad day.
Yeah.
I'm going to remember that's a good one. I like that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you have said that in every race you've been in, every endurance race, probably beyond, you know, like a marathon distance, that at some point you've thought, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. And this is the part of the suffering and the mind over body kind of element that you say, okay, maybe I'll just make it to the next aid station and then I'll drop out. And then you get there and you realize, no, I'm going to make it to the next aid station. So talk about that in terms of, you know, who the people who say I'm going to stop at the aid station and then drop out and those that keep going. What's the difference?
Yeah, I think it comes back to your mindset, and I think it comes back to experience. You know, I've learned in with anything in life, never quit at the darkest moment, because that's when we always quit. You know, when you think everything is hopeless, and you regret that. And you know, I've had what are called DNFs. You know, did not finish. And you know, those are permanent. I mean, you don't forget about those things. And I think that when it comes to running specifically and aid stations, you know, when you're running these long distances, like 100 miles nonstop, and you're having a really bad moment, what tends to happen is you just say to yourself, okay, when I get to the next aid station, I'm dropping out. Like, this is it. It's over. And you get to the aid station and you tell your crew, I'm done. You know, you take off your race number, you quit the race, and, you know, they might be driving you back to the hotel or whatever. And on that drive back, you start feeling like, oh, now I'm feeling better. Like, why did I do that? Yeah. So I tell people, just chill out. You know, when you get to the aid station, don't take off that number. Just sit down, you know, have some food, stretch things out, and just say to yourself, I'm not going to quit at any aid station. So get up and just walk out of that aid station. You don't have to go fast. Just walk. And inevitably, if you can get out of that chair and just keep walking onward, you get to a point where you just say, wow, I'm now a mile away from that aid station. I'm not going back. And you just keep going forward. And inevitably, you know, you come back.
You tell a story, and I can't remember which race it is, but maybe it was one of your early 100-mile races where you made it within a mile and a half of the finish, and you were going to drop out. And your dad was there, and your dad had some good words for you.
Yeah, I mean, I'll never forget those words. I was done. And it sounds, you know, like, how could you stop after running, you know, 90, you know, almost 99 miles in a 100-mile race? You're so close to the finish. But if you've ever been in that place, I mean, I've seen people at Western States literally collapse within eyesight of the finish line and not be able to finish. So my dad, you know, he just said, you know, son, run if you can, walk if you have to, crawl if you must, just never give up. And I thought about those words, and it just said, just keep, do whatever you have to do. It's not dignified, but just crawl. Just keep going.
But it is dignified to cross that finish line. It may not look for a great picture, but...
Well, I would argue that the person who crawls across the finish line gets way more cheers for them from the crowd than
yes.
The person who flies across the finish line looking like they've just run a mile.
Especially at Western States.
No, I mean, there's a Western States, yeah, the final, it's so ironic that more people finish the race in the last hour than any other time frame in the race. I think people are, you know, just feeling the gravitational pull of the finish line. And they call it the golden hour because it is so emotional to watch people that are, you know, they're like zombies. They're completely destroyed and they just will themselves across the finish line. And five times as many people come out to Western States to watch the golden hour as do to watch the winner. So I think that just the human spirit and the human drama of that final hour is so powerful.
And such a metaphor for life, you know, that so many of us are just trying to get through, and there's so many good and wonderful but also horrible moments. And, you know, we want to sometimes give up both on ourselves or those on our family. And it's so important just to, we're all in it together. We're all going towards the finish line and we can make it even if we need to crawl.
I think it was Dostoevsky that said, you know, the sole essence of life is suffering. And when you think about it, I mean, life is really a lot about suffering. And that's the human spirit, right? Our ability just to keep crawling onward.
Well, Dean, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your runner's high and journey. And we look forward to seeing you here again in Park City soon.
I hope we can all share some footsteps together one day. That'd be grand.
Thanks, Dean. Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's public affair hour shows.
Wherever you find your podcasts, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.